You're listening to a Pop House Network podcast for developers by developers.
So, is it recording? All right, let's get this party started.
Woo-hoo!
Hi, everyone. This is Off Heat, interesting podcast about Java news. We are, you know, invited back to Dev Nexus, so this is one of our like live podcasts. Yeah, for, you know, like, we keep getting invited back. It's like the Dev Nexus didn't learn their lesson, but you know what? We're taking it. So these are very fun episodes because, like, the ones that we get to do live, we usually try to figure out sometimes, like, you know, guess that we can go over certain things. This one is essentially super fun because we actually have representatives of three of the larger, essentially foundations that, or larger and smaller. Foundations that essentially are available for those open source developers that want to, like, you know, put their source code somewhere and then essentially go under an umbrella. And we're going to talk about them, right? Like what makes them tick? What is it, why one is so good or what is, oh my gosh, there's beer. Oh.
Fight.
So, I lost my thread thing in a throw for us.
Not the first time.
But no, so it's going to be like a very fun episode. For those who have seen this before, you know, like our off-heap episodes on DevNexus usually have kind of like a quiz or play component, and this is no different. So with that, let's get started. For those who are never seen this before or never heard us before, my name is Freddy Gimme. I'm a distinguished engineer at Expedia Group, author, speaker, Java champion, Seattle Java User Group co-organizer, and I'm here with my other hosts.
I'll start on the end. So Bob Pollan, senior software engineer at Snowflake, Apache Software Foundation member, Java champion, and speaker, and CJUG board member.
Yeah, and I'm Ivar Grinstad. I'm the Jakarta U developer advocate at Eclipse Foundation. I'm also a Java champion and a speaker, and I'm also actually an Apache committer.
A lot of overlap here.
Except for me. I'm Erin Schnabel. I spent 21 years at IBM. I'm a distinguished engineer now at Red Hat, and I'm the chair of a new baby foundation, the Common House Foundation. And
All right.
Oh, and I'm a Java champion too.
Don't forget that.
Across the board.
All right. So the first things to get out of the way, not to get out of the way, but just to inform everybody, there's conference coming up, Java 1 and Redwood City, starts on March 18th to 20th. I actually will make my trip down there for one day. So, you know, I'll be there on the 19th. I don't know if you guys are going to be down there for J1. We also have Arc of AI. That's March 31st to April 3rd. Venkat is the one who's organizing the conference. If you don't know who Venkat is, he's one of the most prolific speakers, and now he is into like conference organizing, and he kind of sees that AI is where everybody's going, and it's time for the Java ecosystem to be part of this. So he's essentially almost like creating this conference to like get all of us, you know, into it, right? The third one is...
Wait, are you going to that one too?
Yeah.
Are you going to have any time off after this? Or?
No, it's all gone. Like, I'm done traveling after this. I'm done taking days off after this. But yeah. Actually, on Arc of AI, I will be speaking of a personal project that I did of how to essentially manage an unruly mailbox. I have around like 16,000 emails. And how do you actually decide to manage that? And the way that I did it is, like, I didn't want to send the 16,000 emails to some third-party servers or anything like that. So that session is about how to use OLAMA, essentially LAMA 3, to actually create a locally running email classifier using Java on LAMA. It's actually pretty fun. So the next one, I think this one is yours, Bob, right?
Yeah, I'll take this one. So Community Over Code North America is going to be going on in September. So they announced the conference. It's going to be in Minneapolis. For those that may not be familiar, that is the Apache Software Foundation's conference, flagship conference. So You'll see a ton of different topics about Apache software projects there, open source community. So, Minneapolis, and they've been forming the tracks. I think most of the tracks are finalized. There's quite a diversity of different tracks there. So I assume those will be announced shortly, as well as the CFP.
Got it. And then the next one, Dev2 Next. That's in Colorado Springs. Who runs this one?
That's another Venkat one.
I think it's a Venkat.
So that's what he started with. Arc of AI happened after. And this one is, I think, more of a general developer conference. There's tracks on Java. There's tracks. I think there are tracks on AI. I think there's tracks on general wellness and a lot of different things. And that's in Colorado. And I think that's one where they have some very lucrative speaker things where it's they take care of their people on that one. So
CFP is
still. It's still open? Okay, awesome. Yeah, I didn't have a piece.
Oh, maybe I should submit. No, I'm not going to submit anything. That's it. Yeah. And also, Ivor, Aaron, if you want to, if you have things that you want to share, always just chime in.
Yeah, I noticed these are all North American conferences, but of course, there's a bunch of conferences going on in Europe as well.
Yeah. Anyone that you're speaking at?
I'm speaking at quite a few of them. The next coming up there will be JavaLand in Germany.
Oh, no.
Is that a race course this year, right? Amusement park?
Yeah, that JavaLand is famous because they usually run it in like I think it was like a amusement park.
Yeah.
And this year it's a racetrack. So you can drive crazy things.
We love the American conference, but I do want to try the Europeans.
Just maybe not in March.
Yeah, not in March. All right, news. All right, and I think, Bob, you brought this one, right?
Yeah, so actually Michael shared this one through the chat, but it was one that I ran into on the mailing list of the ASF because people are complaining about it. But there is a company out there that created, and I won't name the company, but they created a chat bot that would go through open source repositories and create security issues directly in their JIRAs in the case of the ASF or whatever repository you might be using. And ended up, so AI's come a long way. It's not quite at the part where you should just have it going out in the wild and just submitting security issues. I think one thing that maybe well-intended people thought that they were being helpful, but the reality is open source developers get inundated with notifications, emails, feature requests. And if you're going to submit a security issue, you want it to be right. False positives are not a good thing to be sending to your communities because then they focus on the wrong things.
It's not just that. The GitHub has a maintainers community, and it got raised there too.
Yeah.
Because a bunch of projects were just getting, not just with security issues, but just spammed in general.
Yeah. You basically DDoSed the open source community. There were people kind of speaking out about it. So Jarek Pollack from the Airflow community was the one that I saw posted the first kind of message of this on the ASF list that this was happening. And I haven't tracked down is I think they've gotten it to stop, or at least they blocked it somehow.
GitHub has been chasing. They are actively deleting, they're just chasing it if they can find it. And so once they started following some patterns, because the AI is not that smart, and they try to.
Is this the beginning of an arms race where there's going to be commit supervising LLMs that are this one is crap, don't even try.
This is the same company, they were honestly trying to be helpful. It just wasn't. They were honestly trying to be helpful. The volume was off. The content was off. It wasn't actually functional. So it's like they were trying to do a good thing. They just did it totally badly.
Yeah, right. Because the way I've seen it is there are GitHub actions. Like opt-in is the way that you want to go with these things, right? You have a project and you're like, okay, you know what? Let me have some kind of linter or vulnerability scanner. And I think GitHub offers a bunch, right? Or you can find a bunch on the plugins, right? So that is kind of the right way instead of just forcing it. Hey, you're an open source maintainer. I'm sure that you have nothing else to do then. look at this automated pull request for something that may be broken.
That's the right idea. If you fix security issues at the root, you kind of, it's a tide that lifts all the boats, right? So if you fix in the open source project, it's not all of these companies fixing in all their forks and things of that nature. So it's the right idea, just poor execution.
Yeah, I still remember the...
Well, I think people have a maybe incorrect assumption about where the bottleneck is for resource, right? Like, they don't account for the fact that reviewing all the pull requests is where a lot of the labor cost comes in, too, right? So it's like they want to be helpful, but they don't understand the work that they're causing by their attempt at assistance.
Yeah, and it's one of those where, like, you know, for the big open source projects, there's like people that actually get paid for actually maintaining them. But for like your smaller, you know, like I'm putting my heart out on this project, they are just people that are doing this as a side job, and they're trying to be good with the community, but they're just one person, right? Like, or they could be just like two or three maintainers, and that's it. So, oh, questions from the audience. We're live.
Yeah. So I think a couple of years ago there was a new. The Hacktoberfest had the same problem where, like, where people were just spamming like pull requests
to get their credit so they could get their T-shirt.
Part of Hacktoberfest.
Mm. Oh, and okay. So I just repeated the question for the benefit of the recording. So, 2 weeks ago, Hacktoberfest had the same issue where maintainers were just flooded by this pull request for like security things or just regular pull requests.
Everything.
Yeah. Yeah, because this was a couple of a few years ago, but it was a similar issue. It was not AI at that time. It was just people randomly merging making pull requests to open source projects because that was part of, you would get a T-shirt.
The idea, exactly. The idea was that you make your first pull request. They're trying to get more people to participate, and so everybody would want their T-shirt or their credit or their sticker, and so you ended up with a lot of garbage.
Oh.
Because people would want to, they wanted to participate, they wanted to help, but it was just garbage.
Yeah, no. May I recommend an old podcast, Breaking Into Open Source? So actually, Bob recorded this with Josh, where there was this kind of like, we actually have it in our website, if you ever go. But like Bob and Josh recorded a couple podcasts of what does it mean to, you know, get into open source and how to contribute and how to actually help instead of just, you know, hey, I have an idea, here you go.
Yeah, there's a couple of good, I mean, again, a lot of it's just understanding the culture of the different communities that you're contributing into, and they can vary by project. Good books to read. So Debugging Teams by Brian Fitzpatrick has good pointers on dealing with open source communities. And Matt Topple of the Arrow community, he actually has a section on contributing, not specifically to Arrow, but to open source projects. And it's good, like, the intent is, again, good. You're trying to get more people in, and you want more people in. But if you don't spend the time up front to, like, understand the projects, understand the conventions that go into, hey, all of our pull requests should start with a JIRA. All of our code formatting should be like this. Like, somebody is going to be telling you that or just looking at 100 broken builds and thinking, where's the signal in this noise?
Yeah. All right, we're going to leave it at that because we're going to cover a couple more things.
Yeah.
So next one, IBM acquires DataStax. And to be honest, that was just me like screaming like, oh my gosh, that happened.
The best part from a Common House perspective, right, is we have Hibernate, which is Red Hat, which is now going to IBM. We have Quarkus, which is a Red Hat sponsored project, which is coming to Common House, which is, you know, all the people are now coming to IBM. DataStax is now coming to IBM, which is Tattoo Jackson.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, and DataStax is also a big Cassandra. I mean, that's their main product. Was an Apache.
I just like Tattoo maintains Jackson, but
Tattoo
like,
maintains Jackson. Got
right?
it. Okay.
So it's not his work job with DataStax, right? But.
You get the employee now.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's the employee anchor. It's the employee gravity is now, it's all Big Blue. It's like, gosh, darn it. Not what we wanted.
But yeah, I mean, that was the big thing. I mean, DataStax has been out there as a company for a long time, and they, you know, they were teasing IPO for a while, and then you know, again, mixing, you know, data storage for Apache Cassandra. So it looks like IBM, and they have been doing a lot of generative AI stuff as well, which I'm sure is part of the appeal.
Right, right. No, and that is interesting to see. We see some consolidation of the industry on these things. Like some of them, I don't think we are quite GE acquiring like magazines yet, but it feels that some of them still make sense, right? Like this actually makes sense even for an AI move, right? Because like, you know, again, data storage and data retrieval are big things for this. But I think what we're going to expect to be seeing is even more consolidation on the industry. All right. So this is interesting. Our next topic is Wildfly is moving to a foundation. And Divisium is going to Common House. I feel like we almost need to have like a scoring board.
I don't
like
to hear you do so much.
Told you, I win.
Oh gosh. No. So the interesting part. So Wildfly is essentially an implementation. Is it considered a full implementation of Jakarta EE?
Oh yes, it is.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting because. let's see if we can break some NDAs today.
Aaron, please tell us why this is interesting.
Okay, if it moves into any of your foundations, blink twice. We are not recording video.
I haven't had an application yet from Wildfly, so I wouldn't be surprised if they apply, because that's likely, but I don't know yet.
Yeah, like so the story here is Wildfly just announced that they are moving to a foundation, and they have not said like which foundation they're moving into.
And they're making up their own minds, right? So they could end up at a clip like Wildfly, especially because of the association with Jakarta, may end up going there. I don't actually know.
Yeah. So it's interesting. But yeah, and then Divisium moves to Common House. Tell us about that one.
I got Divisium and InfiniSpan and Hibernate. We'll talk about it more later. But in a lot of these cases, for the projects that have moved to Common House, part of what we're trying to do is say, if you're an established project with all of your established build processes and all your established governance processes and all the stuff, like, we aren't going to mess with it. Mm-hmm. Right? So we're not going to make you change your governance model. We're not going to make you change your build model. We're not going to make you change your release model, which effectively means moving to our foundation is comparatively cheap.
Right. No, and I think let's now take a little like step back and go into the meat of what we wanted to get into this particular podcast, right? Like, if you're you know, or you ever consider contributing or creating your own open source project, there is a point in time where first you're just doing this on your own, and then suddenly you're like, oh my gosh, you know, this is, you know, you publish it out there, hopefully somebody likes it, and then you start growing into this, right? And one of the things that we have learned as an industry is that usually, as your project becomes popular or is popular, you want to be under the auspices of a foundation. A foundation kind of like it's a, you know, it's a group of you know, it's almost like an organization that helps nurture your project. And we live in interesting times because foundations are kind of like, you know, they are a newish thing, and we have choices, and that's one of the things that we wanted to kind of like tease out. We had this opportunity for having like essentially 200 presenters of like, you know, the essentially the hottest foundations right now in the Java space. And we wanted to like get their perspective of, if I have an open source project, you know, let's say if I have a young project, you know, what do I go to you? Or if I have an established project, what would I consider your foundation? And so with that, why don't we start, you know, I guess from right to left. So Aaron, what's your spiel to that open source developer out there that is, you know, thinking about a foundation? Or what would you, maybe the first part is like, what should you join a foundation?
So joining a foundation has a lot of reasons. For some of the foundations that have come, or some of the projects that have come to our foundation, and I know it's the same for the other two, it is, part of it is an assertion of vendor independence, a demonstration of vendor independence, you might say. You get a little bit of distance if you do have a sponsoring company. That varies by foundation in terms of how that is accomplished, I guess. But that's part of why you do it. I think there are also like a couple different reasons, and it's part of why I created Common House, for example, right? Mm-hmm. So I was looking at, all right, I've been in this industry for 26 years. I know all of the people that created app servers are within 16 years older than me, right? I just, like, that's my generation of people. I was on the young end of all the people who built app servers. I was right in the mix of all of that, but I'm on the young end. My friends, my older friends, they're retiring right now, right? So we have libraries that were literally born at Codehouse, right? All those, Jackson's one of them, right? All those 27, 8, 9, 30 years ago, right? And the people who created these projects are getting ready to retire. What happens now? How does that work? Who's going to shepherd them, and who's going to take care of that, and who's going to get them to whatever comes next? And I think all of us, all of the foundations that we have, are trying to say, you're going to be in a place that's vendor neutral, and we will help make sure that there's a what comes next. Like, we'll help you answer the what comes next. And that's a primary reason, I think, to join a foundation. There's that assertion of, for some of the projects, like, I am not my company, right? This project is not my company, that vendor neutral home part. There's some space there. And then there's answering the what comes next question. And I think Eclipse and Apache have some other additional things. But when I was looking at, we started looking at some foundations for some of the Red Hat projects. We're looking at foundations for different reasons. Some of them were like, we want to show that this is not just a Red Hat project. The impression is that it's a Red Hat project. We want to make it more clear that it isn't, right? So that's why people started looking. I personally, like, as my own person, looked at the options. I love Apache and Eclipse, by the way. They're great. But it's like, I watched some of our projects. We had a group that just went to Apache ahead of this. It was 6 months of them rearranging all of their functional infrastructure, three people. That's a lot of money. That's expensive to move all that stuff. The more mature the project, the more invasive that is. And I also hack on some other projects in my spare time, and I have people throwing money at me with Buy Me a Coffee or Ko-Fi, whatever, right? So it's like, we're in a different, I feel like we're in a kind of different era with how people sponsor stuff and how they want to participate in things. And so I started being like, well, what would it look like if we made a different one that approached all this governance stuff way differently, right? And like, did stuff that was way less disruptive. Again, I'm watching that expensive thing and I'm like, what would happen if I made something different? And everybody looks at me like, Aaron, what the hell are you talking about? And I'm like, okay, I'll be honest. Me and ChatGPT were great friends. Because I threw together all of the bylaws and all the, like, verisimilitude, right? Like, if I was going to design something that functioned differently, what would it look like? Because having an abstract conversation was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm sorry, I'm talking a lot. But that was why, right? That was my motivation, was like, I have mature projects. Jackson is one, for example, and I was talking to Tattoo, and he's like, the projects I'm trying to go after are not Eclipse projects, and they're not Apache projects. They're in the never, those two. They've already made up their minds, never, right? So it's like, how do I make a home for them that still solves this longevity problem, but addresses the concerns they have about keeping their identity, keeping their processes, keeping their capabilities, keeping their functions, right? Because these are mature projects, and that's why Common House.
And I think that is an interesting perspective where you're saying, look, if you're just starting and don't even have a structure, Common House can help you, but you know, like, what we were, like, what Common House was thinking is, like, there is a bunch of, and it's kind of interesting because, you know, like usually, like, we talk about, like, you know, Gen X, you know, like, you know, the greatest generation, Gen Y, Gen Z, and millennials. But I think like Aaron is it almost feels that now we have, like, the application server generation, like the React generation.
I moved. I want to say this because it's something I observed that I thought was wild. So I was at at IBM for 21 years. And I was there with all the app server days. We did all the drinking. We did all the parties. We did all, like, that was what you did in the 2000s when we were inventing app servers. You got really drunk all the time. I don't know why. Well, it shows. I'm not going to say no. But it was like there was a certain mood about the people that were working on that. Now, what's wild is I came to Red Hat with the JBoss team. Do you want to know what? Parallel lives. It's wild. They had all the same. It's like I have the same experiences just with different people. So, like, we talk, like, and you're saying it's a generational thing. It is not. I'm not kidding. Like, there is a group of people who worked on all of the app server stuff at that time, all of the early specs, all of that stuff that happened, and they all have similar experiences and similar feelings and similar activities, and it is a whole thing.
I think that's interesting, and it's something I think we need to, like this is going to be over beers. If anyone wants to sponsor, we have a beer icon in our website. But yeah, so I want to go dive into it. But now, you know, what I want to do is Ivor, you're here as the Eclipse Foundation, and this is like one of the most well-known foundations, right? What is, you know, like who are you targeting? Yeah. Who should come and be best served by being with Eclipse Foundation?
Yeah, so I agree with everything that Aaron said. It's about vendor neutrality and come to work together in a vendor neutral space. And we have several ways of achieving that. You have the regular projects, the open source projects, like the Apaches has and the Commonwealth Foundation has. But we also have these industry collaborations. So this concept of working groups or interest groups where it's more kind of targeting companies, but individuals are also welcome and it's free for individuals. Companies would usually pay some sort of fee that is dependent on what it is. They would come together and participate on the open source platform, and then they would compete on their implementations of it. So Jakarta E is one example of one of those working groups where we produce the Jakarta E specifications. But we have lots of other working groups, and our biggest growth these days are in Europe. And Eclipse Foundation is actually a European software foundation. We're the biggest software foundation in Europe. And we also have a brand new working group that is working with the regulatory things and stuff in Brussels. So we have a working group at Eclipse Foundation where Apache is a member, where Linux Foundation is a member, where lots of the big European companies are members to working on the open regulatory things. So we're more than just software project. We're also doing this political things that are coming over.
And they're
us,
amazing. I'm not doing it.
Yeah. No. And
that's why I love
it. And also, I think the difference, if you want to say, between... I think Eclipse Foundation and Apache Foundation are much more similar. We were created about the same. Apache is a bit older.
2 years or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Within.
Yeah. So. But it's based on, if you read the bylaws and the development processes and everything, it's very similar. And I think for us, the process is got prescriptive. It says what you should do. It doesn't say how you should do it. So it said you have to have a committer vote for something, but it doesn't say how is that going to be. Is it going to be on a GitHub tracker or an email list or something? That's up to the project to kind of self-organize around it. We can come with some recommendations and that kind of things, but it's very free to kind of, and that's why Bob was talking in the beginning about the culture of a project can be very different, even within the same foundation. Mm-hmm. We have the same sort of development process and the bylaws and that kind of stuff, but it's up to the project itself to kind of figure out how to get funding, how to grow and grow the committer base and contributors and that kind of thing. Can vary very much from project to project.
And I think it's worth teasing out, and I know it gets lost in the details. One of the things that is unique about the Eclipse Foundation is that these working groups essentially are a way to create standards. Right.
Not necessarily. Jakarta E is that. It's about standards. But we also have a working group for the Eclipse IDE. So that's about companies that are using the Eclipse platform or the Eclipse IDE, which is a product of built on the Eclipse platform, that will come together and they pay to sort of keep that project alive.
Right. And that is interesting. Yes, because like one of the things for, you know, and I agree, like there is the working groups are not just for standards, but it does feel that there is a home if you do want to create a standard that Eclipse Foundation provides, mm-hmm. a way for them to essentially do the work of saying like this is not necessarily it's a JSR, but it is like if you want to do an implementation, this is kind of like the standards that we collect, you know, and that's the big Jakarta EE.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because before Jakarta EE, there weren't any standards process at the Eclipse Foundation. The Eclipse Foundation's standardization process was created with Jakarta EE. And right. After that, we have some other working groups that also create standards.
Did MicroProfile come first?
MicroProfile came after. And they MicroProfile has adopted, they were just a project at the Eclipse Foundation first.
Yes, timing-wise.
Yeah, but then they became a working group a little bit after Jakarta EE.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they adopted exactly the same process. It's word for word the same development and standardization process as Jakarta EE has. So they're so aligned
that it just feels that
and that is all the other standardizations from the working groups are using the same specification process,
and for those who don't know, like the one thing that makes it interesting, right, like when you have a standard and then you have implementations behind underneath it, then you have the ability to, as a consumer of these, to switch out, you know, that particular implementation with something else, right? Like we're talking about Wildfly a little bit, but there is, you know, like Glassfish, and there's
Liberty.
Maybe. And that's kind of like the interesting part when you create a natural like structure that allows you to do that and being able to switch those things out. It's extremely hard, but it's extremely impressive that we have that ability, because we usually don't do those things. We just are the consumers of it, and it's amazing. Yes, we have a question from the audience.
I'm trying to yell it really loud so you don't have to repeat it, but with Common Haas, mm-hmm. and if you could go back and talk to yourself and say, here's one thing that you needed to know that you didn't know when you were first starting it, what would it be?
Well, I was only first starting it a year ago. So this is very new. I have learned so much in the last year. I will say I learned a lot about what I think, not actually being on the board for Apache or Linux Foundation or CNCF, as a Linux Foundation sub-project. I know a lot more about trademark law. Trademark law sucks. But it's so...
1 minute response.
Archaic. No, it's an interesting thing with side effects, and that's what is fascinating. So we like to gripe about trademarks, right? But part of the very strict language of trademark law is that if I want to own a trademark, so if the foundation is a neutral home, owns the trademark, that owner has to demonstrate that they have control over the quality of the good. Mm-hmm. Or the trademark can be invalidated. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that Apache has the Apache way and that they have votes for releases and that defined process, that is Apache clearly demonstrating that they have control over the quality of the good. Absolutely no question. And Eclipse has the same, I think you allow the projects to do a little bit different, but there is still some vendor neutral things and some voting and stuff. Again, Eclipse is demonstrating quality of good. So like the challenge for me with Common Haas is I want every project to be able to keep doing what they're doing. I don't want to mess with it, right? Without so the question is, from a trademark perspective, how do I define the bylaws and the policies of this brand new little baby foundation so that I can still demonstrate that I am asserting control? It's the me as the foundation, but I'm the primary hamster in the wheel, so just deal with it. How do we demonstrate that the foundation, as the owner of the trademark, still has control over the quality of the good, even though I want to delegate all of that
to the actual
to the project?
So you have to demonstrate. It's kind of like you have to demonstrate that you can demonstrate that you have something that does demonstrate you do quality.
So we've done some. I've done some very creative things in the sponsorship agreement, right? To basically handle that case, which says we are in a collaborative relationship. I am delegating the ability for you to produce quality. You're taking the responsibility. You signatories are taking responsibility for producing quality goods, quality releases, whatever, under this trademark. And if I tell you there's a problem,
that's the foundation
speaking right now. That's all messed up, but
no,
it's my brain.
You,
it's just I'm the hamster in the wheel right now, so it's fine. But then you have to act on it, right? Like I get to oversee you, and I like so that's how we try. So like that has been a whole learning experience. Yes, exactly. But it, I'm acting as a regulator, is what was said. So that is a whole new thing that I learned. Like I had so many of my friends, because of course, when you're any startup founder ever, they tell you that their first people are always their friends. You always go to your friends first. And so a lot of my friends who had their projects, they didn't want to use Apache, for example, because the process was invasive for them. Right. And they didn't want, they already know their stuff. They don't want to do that. And they just would decide otherwise. And it wasn't until I started really understanding the trademark law and trying to get through, like, I know more about this law stuff than ever. It's ridiculous. But it wasn't until I started doing that that I started to understand why.
And what I want to do now is I want to hear the Apache Software Foundation story.
So before Bob goes over, no, Erin has talked so much, so I'll steal
it. Well, a lot of it's the same as what they already said, but here's the difference.
The purpose of joining a foundation is like Eclipse Foundation. If I'm going to talk about why should you join us, it's about we have staff to take care of these things. And if you're an open source project and you don't want to take care of these things, you don't want to set up your infrastructure or develop a development process or anything, we got it for you. We have you covered.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's fair because, like, again, it's a maturity thing, right? Like, when you're doing your you know, after work kind of like coding, that's one thing. You don't need a foundation. But once you start getting serious or you get in traction, then these things come into play. So why should we go to ASF?
Well, so I guess the thing to start with is what is the ASF? So the ASF is a 501c3 charity, which is a little different type of a formation than almost all the other foundations.
Both of us, both Eclipse is in Europe.
Eclipse is in Europe, so they have different.
And Common House is a 501c6.
But it's still a non-for-profit.
They're all non-for-profits. But you know, so Apache had to go through a process of demonstrating being a charity, like what they're doing for the public. So the Apache Software Foundation's kind of motto and their reason for existing is software for the public good.
Do you want to know a secret?
Oh, of course I do.
When I was starting this foundation and trying to figure out like what kind of organization, I learned a thing, which is Apache is one of the last 501c3
there
foundations for software because the government decided no. So
that's
you can't
try to apply, you would not get you get
correct. Lost. They don't consider software anymore as a public good.
Well,
it's not that. From the IRS perspective, are you just looking at US law, right? Are you a purely public good or are you a trade group good?
Yeah, so let me expand on that rather because I was going to get into that as part of what I was saying. So I mean there is distinctions between what the ASF can do versus what other foundations can do. So being a charity, as Erin's mentioning, you have a very narrow focus of what you can do and influence, which is so I don't know that the IRS would not approve software, but you have to walk a very straight line in order to maintain that status.
Yeah.
So, for example, whereas business leagues and other types of not-for-profits can get involved in the political process, the ASF is restricted from using funding, lobbying, and making that part of our purpose because we're more similar to like a church or a university type organization than a business that where you're trying to sell something specifically. So the ASF, you know, the what you're donating to the ASF, you're donating your code that's going to be licensed under the Apache software license. So we only deal with Apache software license projects. And that project's purpose is supposed to be there for the public. So all of the processes and things that go into the ASF, you know, how we handle trademarks, how we handle releases, how we onboard people to those projects are about making sure that the product that we produce is perceived as a good for the public, not for a specific company, not for a specific interest, which could be for a political party or anything else. What we're focusing on is the public good. So things like, you know, the formation around project management committees in Apache, there is a voting process where you're accepted as a PMC member, and those are the people that cut releases according to, as we already heard, a specified process from the foundation where we will say you have to have a vote in order to cut a release. That vote needs to be approved by three members of that PMC for it to be valid. There's some wiggle room on the timing, depending on whether it's security related or not. In fact, that was a very hot topic of conversation within the foundation of when that all applies. There are rules out around when we can bring committers in, and the agreements that you sign are basically signing over to your trademark. Like, so the copyright gets assignable to the ASF. So when companies donate projects to the ASF, they are assigning the code over, and there's an entire process of going through that. Now, why come to the ASF? Now, the ASF is older by just a little bit, but you know, as far as how these processes came about and what we do differently than other foundations is this kind of grew out of almost a volunteer movement. So officers of the ASF and VPs of the ASF are not employees of the ASF. It's run by volunteers. So I'm also, I don't always mention this, but I'm VP of fundraising for the ASF. Woo. That is volunteer title. And it just means I get to do work that helps fund the foundation. And that work is strictly voluntary because as the foundation started, you know, nobody knew that there was going to be all this business interest around it. So there was a strong effort to keep a lot of the governance still voluntary based. Now, as open source evolved, a lot of positions became paid where, hey, I'm being paid to contribute software, but my role as a committer, as a PMC member, as a VP of different things within the foundation is completely voluntary. You know, we run a ship that does not have a ton of paid staff. So like, if we want things to happen, it's by vote of the members. And it's very much, you know, you aim for consensus, but, you know, there are things where we have majority rule on things. So it's very tough for us to change some of the core processes.
We have the same
volunteer totally. Based.
Yeah.
But just to be clear, like ASF is also like one of those that will protect you because you.
Well, so for trademark, to get into trademark law, because as a member, I've learned a lot more about trademark than I ever want to know. The other thing, so you have to defend the trademark. So, you know, another reason to go to a foundation is if you don't want to be the person that has to do that, we have a VP of brand, which is Mark Thomas from Tomcat Famousness. That runs through that and will get applies for the trademarks. And then we have, you know, legal counsel that helps us defend those trademarks against, you know, sometimes it's against folks that shouldn't be using them. Sometimes it's against the companies that are contributing to the projects that are maybe misusing or trying to claim ownership or using them in a way that it looks like, oh, we're in control of this versus the ASF. So there are a lot of things.
For example, or can you give me like, can I throw this out there just so everyone that's listening to that understands all this? Because, like, the feather, or, you know, the
Apache feather?
The Apache feather and all that.
Sure.
So if there's a company that decides to put that on their website or anything else, that's what you're talking about, where he will see that and say, or someone's reported it to him and said, I need to go tell them to take that down.
Sometimes. So there we have usage policies. So within the Apache.org website, there is proper usage of our trademarks and logos.
Eclipse has that, CNCF has that, Linux Foundation has that, OpenJS yep. Foundation has that, all of them will have. And a lot of the language, if you go and look, it is exactly that. It's like, is this company claiming that they own it? Right? And it's about making sure that it remains something that's owned by the foundation and not by company X.
He does that all for free. That's his volunteer.
He volunteers as our VP of brand. Yes. So I mean, you know, the we have folks that have been doing that for a long time and have a lot of experience. You know, so again, getting into more of the pitch side of it. You know, the Apache Software Foundation, we talked a lot of the drawbacks of incubation, but there's actually a ton of projects that come into incubation because they don't really know how to run a community. They don't know how to do that process because maybe it's a few academics that built this awesome thing like Spark at a university. And they're like, okay, we want to be able to make this project try to go viral and bring a bunch of people to the table with experience and skills that we don't have. Apache is great at that because they will go through the incubator. They'll learn from people that have done it because each project that goes through the incubator gets mentors that are on their list and giving advice to them of what, you know, they should and shouldn't be doing with their communities from past experience so that they can make those right choices. And then when they get voted and graduate, then they're known as a top level project. And it's expected that the PMC is going to be policing that. Now, we, of course, have a board and things above that if things are getting out of hand where things could be escalated. But in reality, our board does not intervene on projects very often. They are independent projects. They are running themselves according to Apache processes that we've defined. But outside of those processes, we give a lot of leeway to those projects of how they want to manage their community.
And that is part of like what's called the Apache way.
The Apache way is what, yeah, the informal name for what we call the things that are kind of guidelines and the things that are actually rules of what you need to do.
No, and that is also like an interesting, like the incubator, it is a very Apache thing where you cannot just go in and start. It's like,
yeah,
they take you through this.
You just need a member to sponsor your project and it can get voted into the incubator. It's very low friction, right? If you want to get in the incubator, go ahead and ask,
yeah.
Right? And if you can find people that will mentor your project and get the votes to get you in, you're going to get it. You don't need funding. You don't need any money up front. Again, it's volunteer run. So it's like you may or may not get out of the incubator depending on how you run your community. Hmm. But there's nothing we're asking you to pony up to come in.
Can I ask you just real quick?
One final question. And then because we cannot go through the dating game. this is the fun part. And then we can. Okay, no, let's listen. So
I'll ask after.
So this is the fun part of not that anything before it was very fun, but actually it's actually extremely fun.
The party's over.
So this is the OSS dating game. And what this is like, you know, we have essentially three suitors, right? We have three open source foundations that are, you know, vying for projects, right? Like, you know, like they're saying, like, you know, maybe you want to come over here, right? And I am going to represent that open source project out there that doesn't have a foundation. It is looking for one. So
I win.
So
you may not want the suitor, though.
There is that.
It's like, why do I want
for
this?
Real?
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask some interesting questions, and then I'm going to give everybody just like one quick 15, 20-second answer. On these things. And these are questions about, like, you know, like real open source questions. So the first one, if I were a pull request, how long would it take to review me?
Project dependent. I'm out.
Yeah. So I agree. It depends. And it also depends a little bit of time zone. So if there is a pull request, I see it in the morning. If I'm the one reviewing it, I'd probably do it within a couple of hours, but it also depends on how big that pull request is and how well structured it is. So I think the answer is it depends. Okay. It can be.
And that's not necessarily a foundation specific question,
no.
Right?
No,
that's OSS in general.
It could be, yeah.
I think we have some projects that are super mature. They don't go very fast. So, you know, if they get a pull request, they may or may not see it quickly. Other projects are hot off the presses, so
yeah.
They'll be more active.
And some projects may have put some rules on that they need two reviewers or three reviewers.
Yeah.
Some others will let a committer just have one reviewer, and that is good.
And then there's some where it's just YOLO, you can commit to main, right? So if you have commit access in Apache, you could commit to main, but there are projects that institute rules.
And you already have, like Apache has a thing where in order to commit to main, you have to be a committer.
You have to be a committer, right?
So there is a...
Like you can.
There is, yeah. So you the kind of the progression is in Apache. There are people that contribute, which can be anybody. Anybody in this room can offer a pull request up to Apache that a committer on the project or a PMC member can review and then merge in on your behalf. And usually they'll give you credit and things like that for it. The committers can merge, but they can't release the project. So I can merge things into main. I can commit directly to main on some projects if they allow it. PMCs, those are the ones that get to vote to actually cut a version to release the project. And one of the interesting things, and I don't know if this is the same for Common House and Eclipse, is the release process is where it becomes an act of the foundation. A release of software is regulated by vote because we are saying, as a foundation, we are releasing this and taking some liability away from the
this is exactly where I say I'm different.
Yeah,
because
it depends.
Yeah, but I also address that release process, because that is also where we differ a little bit from Eclipse Foundation, because we have the same PMC structure, but that would be a top level project, and the PMC is never involved in the release other than it gives a plus one or a minus one. Right. And the project itself does the release, but we have the EMO, that is the Eclipse Management Office. They would do the release process if it's needed.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So the release review, when you've done a release review, you can freely release for a year. And then you would have to have a new review. And that review just checks that you follow the process and the rules that you have to do.
I've delegated to the projects. They define their own rules. Exactly. They have signed with me that they have responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. We've done that delegation. Yeah. I'm allowed to oversee. I require them to have a very transparent. The one thing I do require is a governance document, which says here's how this project is making decisions.
Yeah.
And so it's mostly because we have benevolent dictators for life, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
But so they have to. But it's like I have, by agreement, delegated to them. They can totally manage their own release process. I don't have to do anything, but I can oversee it and I can request changes. And that's the difference.
And we can then do the release,
which is
for a year.
Way beyond your pull request question.
Yep.
Yeah, but this is good. That's a reason.
But to also answer your question, in the ASF relief cycle, and probably in yours as well, there is a way to veto releases if you negative one, right? Or is there not a veto?
That depends on the project. A PMC can veto it. The EMO can veto.
Yep.
A committer, that depends on whether a project has agreed on having veto rights in there.
Okay.
I think the development process would say that that's a usual thing to do. Plus three plus one.
We're kind of built for like the continuous release process where there's no release process. You just cut the release and it's magically published. Yeah. So we just stay on way. Anyway.
My next question for these three open source software foundation suitors. What's your policy on commitment? Because I need a foundation that won't ghost me after incubation.
So ghosting is an interesting question. It's hard for me to fully understand, like, for me, creating a new foundation, trying to address these projects that are established and have been around forever.
You haven't been heartbroken yet.
Well, my worry is actually the reverse. Right? Like, my worry is that the project lead is going to ghost me rather than me ghosting them. Right? I have to be able to maintain their domain, so my worry is actually completely the inverse. Is that if I have the project leaders ghosting because they disappear.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we have a process for doing that's the EMO does a progress review. If you haven't done a release within a year, or some period of time, they try to do it every year. They will do a progress review and check that, are you still active? Are you still doing this? And have some control questions that the project needs to ask.
And then I think that...
Yeah, so I mean, Apache is similar in that sense, in that during incubation or when a project is a top-level project, it is expected that the PMC chair is releasing reports to the board talking about activity in that project. So it is really the opposite thing is again, the more interesting thing. Now, in an Apache life cycle, if those board reports are not getting submitted, or if a project is lacking a release, there can be questions of roll call where we send an email to that PMC asking, who's still doing stuff? And if they don't respond, or if they respond is like, yeah, I'm not really doing anything anymore, we can suggest that they vote to put their project in what's called the attic. Right. So in Apache, the code never really goes away, but if your community is inactive, you can vote to go to the attic where it says, hey, we are no longer cutting releases.
Given we have a house, we're going to probably do the same thing.
Have an
with
attic.
An attic.
That just makes sense.
100%.
But yeah, I mean, as far as the foundation ghosting, like, the foundation won't ghost you, but they will if you're not being responsive to things like security issues, and those are getting escalated to the board. You know, those are cases where we have to look and say, well, we might have to ghost you because you're going to create liability issues in this new world that's coming up that's very secure.
One of the interesting things, I don't know if either of your foundations do this. I have a check and balance with my projects, right? I've already said I'm going to do this kind of partnership thing. My projects can decide to leave. They can just say, I'm done with this foundation, I'm out. And that's, I have a responsibility to be good to them. And if I'm not, they can vote with their feet and leave.
Yeah.
And that's hugely important to me that they have that option.
Yep.
I want them to stay. It encourages like our council and our decision-making body to like continue to be welcoming and whatever, but they can vote with their feet and leave.
Yeah. But that's the nature of open source. Anybody can fork the
not,
project
not
and
requiring
go,
a fork.
No, and go away. Yeah. So I think we would have the same policy depending on if it's a very valuable trademark or something that we see some usage of it, but it's probably a discussion with the project. I don't think anybody wants to be evil.
Because I know that even though I said we have 1 minute to respond, this all of these are amazing and there's so much content. I'm just going to jump to the last one. All right. Describe your ideal project match with three buzzwords.
Oh boy, I don't have that. Oh, so that's not the last one. That's this. That's what?
Established.
Like four, like, yeah.
I'm looking for established, broadly used, anything. Like, those are my three words. Like, I'm looking for those projects that have been established.
Old, established, working. Mature,
not necessarily mature. Old. Not necessarily old, right? Like, because you can, like, SlateDB joined us recently. SlateDB did. They're relatively new. The person who's a lead was an old Apache person. Like, he knows how that works. So he, it's an established project. He has an established governance process.
So
he's not an amateur.
They know
he knows what he's
do.
Doing. Exactly.
All right.
And he wanted a house.
All right.
Okay. So I'll counter that with, you know, the youngest foundation. It's kind of the most boring buzzword. So we as a more established, I want the buzzwords. Like I want AI, visionary, and Jakarta E.
Do those go together? Are you sure?
And Jakarta EE is like,
I don't know, man.
It's Jakarta E. Yeah, that's the next project, Jakarta EAI. But three ideal, what is it? Ideal project in three buzzwords.
Okay. I'd go with community, governance, and, you know, virality, because Apache is very well known, and if you do things successfully in Apache, you can get a lot of users very quickly.
What
I think is great about Apache, which you said before, is it's really great for young projects that have no idea what they're doing.
Yes.
I think that's fantastic. Like, the incubator process is amazing.
Yeah.
It's super great.
And me as you know, as my three suitors over here are, you know, fighting for my heart. It's hard for me to decide.
I win.
But the good news is that we are in a non-exclusive relationship. And I'm sure that if you're an open source project that is looking for a foundation, we have at the very least three amazing foundations to choose from.
Yay.
So with that, I want to thank all our presenters, all our guests for listening, and the audience for staying through and, and being with us on this amazing off-heat. With that, you know, this is Freddie signing off.
Bob signing off.
Ivar signing off.
Aaron saying bye.
And thank you so much.
Always have to be different.
Of course. I can't say the same thing.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, so good.
By the way, was I a